Workforce Development Committee to order. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to start off with House Bill 220A, then go to House Bill 2034, then House Bill 2283, then House Bill 2285 in that order. And let me start with the public hearing on House Bill 220A. Linda, if you could read a summary while Representative Buckley comes up.
House Bill 2220 requires assessments to be based on progress toward proficiency in a continuum of knowledge and skills, in addition to meeting or exceeding academic content standards of a particular grade level. It would take effect July 1st, 2012.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much. And Representative Peter Buckley representing South Jackson County in the legislature. House Bill 2220 is a small change in terms that it's a step forward for proficiency-based education. And there's a little bit of a story behind it. I want to tell the story because I am partially the product of proficiency-based education. When I was in sixth grade, first day, walk in the classroom, and the teacher there, no one had met this teacher before, and he's a fairly large bald man, and he had a bass next to him, his jazz bass that he played was next to him in the corner, and he got in front of the class and said, okay, here's the deal. You're in sixth grade. By the time you finish sixth grade, you have to finish this, the math textbook, the science textbook, the social studies textbook, etc. That's what you have to finish by the time you get to the end of sixth grade. But I'm going to set things up so that if you can move fast in these things and you want to go on to the seventh grade textbook, you're welcome to. All you have to do is make sure you finish the sixth grade work. So you finish at your own pace, we'll set it up, and if you want to go further in that area, you go further in that area. Or if you have a different passion, say music, for instance, you can spend time in class working on your music projects, whatever your passion is. So he spent, there was about, I think there were 28 of us in the classroom, and he spent that academic year setting up a process in the classroom that made sure each one of us got basic education in each one of the subject areas, and then let us move as fast as we were able to, or take as much time as we needed to, with that material. And Bruce Eckstein, who I ended up going through high school with grade school and high school with, in sixth grade, he finished the sophomore level of math in sixth grade because he was given an opportunity to move forward at that. I made the choice as a sixth grader to just basically do the sixth grade work and then spend time reading. And I read so many books that year, and we had a great school librarian, and the teacher and the school librarian would put stacks of books on my desk. So I'd get through my math text I'd need to do, and I'd read during the day. I couldn't wait to get to school every morning. I just couldn't wait. And it's always been a kind of dream that my kids would have that kind of opportunity to have that education where they couldn't wait to get to school, and the things they're passionate about would have the pathways open for them, and that they would be judged on their proficiency in reaching the ability to conquer a subject and move on. So what this bill does, it gives school districts, it's permissive, it's not a requirement, but it gives one more tool to school districts who want to move in the direction of proficiency-based education to set up a testing apparatus, which already exists. These testing processes already exist, and they can set their schools up, their classrooms up, in order to test proficiency and let students move at the pace that they are able to move at. If they need more time, they take more time. If they go faster, they go faster. It's part of things that we've all been looking for, one of the tools we've been looking for in terms of the seamless education model we've all talked about for years. So I hope you'll consider the bill. I hope you'll be willing to pass the bill and give school districts this additional tool as we move in this direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Bonavici?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Buckley. I like your story. I wish a lot of classes could be that way. Some of the districts are doing this now, so if they're already doing it now, and you said this bill makes it permissive, how is that happening?
This will basically hopefully get, Ms. Chair, Senator Bonici, hopefully this will allow for a kind of consistency in how proficiency-based education is judged statewide. As more people are moving into proficiency-based education, this gives an ability to compare how their proficiency-based testing works with those used in other districts as well. And one quick story about the Springfield Arts and Academic Academy. I'm not sure if you're are you familiar with the Springfield Arts and Academic Academy. Great example of this in action. They have a it's a in-school, in-district charter, and they use the arts to fuel a lot of what they do. And a final project that I was told of by one of the graduates was they had a cooking show, like on Food Network, and it was all it completed their requirements in science and in their cooking component, and they had a live band that played with the cooking show, they had an audience, and they had a TV crew. So students were filming it, students were playing the band, students were doing the cooking part of it, and they were able to set up a process to judge the proficiency of the students' knowledge in certain areas as part of that group project that they did. So there's some exciting work being done in the state. And as in Beaverton, too, as well, there's a great move towards proficiency-based education.
Thank you, Representative Buckley.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
We'll let you get back down the hall. I know you're tied up in some work.
And I'll try not to do too much damage.
Yes. Teresa Richards from the department. And committee members, you also have a written testimony from Nancy Golden from the governor's office that was handed out earlier.
2020. Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Autumn Wilburn, Department of Education. Thanks for allowing us to be here today to testify in support of House Bill 2220A engrossed. We were able to work with Representative Buckley on the House side on some amendments to make it more workable, and that resulted in the bill that you have in front of you today. I'm joined today by Teresa Richards, an education specialist at the department. Among the many things that she does, she also works on proficiency-based education. She really is the expert in this area, and so with this, I'll turn it over to her.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. I am Teresa Richards. I am education specialist at the Department of Education, and I am here to support House Bill 2220. This bill does provide support for proficiency-based education statewide. Districts are implementing this. Many of them are. Some of them are about to, and this will encourage greater implementation. Proficiency-based grading is most effectively supports student learning and accurately reflects student achievement. This bill aligns with our credit options OAR 022-1151, which states that all course credit must be based on students demonstrating defined levels of proficiency to standards. And an enactment of this bill will provide support for districts to revamp their traditional grading systems to reflect proficiency or student performance toward meeting or exceeding standards more accurately portrays grades in a meaningful way.
Do we have any data on which you're basing some of this?
We do not collect the data specifically on proficiency-based education, but we do work with some partners that have been working with implementation and professional development, and they're tracking how many districts have been attending training and who's implementing, and we're recording that. There are a couple of studies going on right now that is trying to document implementation and results, student achievement results. We have worked with individual districts and have heard from them, and knowing anecdotally, they've been tracking their own data and have found increased achievement, increased test scores in math and science in particular.
Well, it is intuitive, and it does, but I don't know. I'm just wondering if I had some research.
Senator George?
Yeah. If you could, on page one of the bill, in lines 23, which is kind of the gist of the bill, it deletes the language achieving the academic content standards for the student's current grade level and replaces it with becoming proficient in the knowledge and skills of. And I'm trying to figure out what the original language did. So what I want to make sure is we're not getting rid of the standards that we've done mm-hmm. for years that worked, A, B, C, D through F, mm-hmm. and replacing it with some squishy thing that parents can't tell exactly how their student is doing. And that's kind of what it sounded like you said. Yeah. So correct me on why I'm wrong on that.
Yes, Senator Chair Hass and Senator George, we are not removing standards, or specifically removing the language there to say knowledge and skills allows more than the academic content standards. It's not just the content subject areas that this would apply to. This could also apply to a career and technical education course, other industry-based courses, so it expands the terminology to say knowledge and skills. And it does, I think, later on address our assessment system, which does measure proficiency on the academic content standards. And if you're aligning your standards to core content areas, it's going to be based on the academic content standards. There are other areas of legislation and our OARs that do say the courses must be aligned to the content standards.
So I just want to make sure. So by changing this language, by taking out academic content standards and changing it to proficient in the knowledge and skills of, it's that second definition that we're placing includes academic content standards.
Yes.
It's not a new standard. It is that standard expanded, but it is definitely inclusive of academic content standards.
Yes.
Okay. Thank
you. And it does not take away the opportunity to base grading on grades. It offers more an expansion of how you portray grades based on proficiency. So you do have to demonstrate to parents and to students where students are in terms of a progression of their learning and the knowledge and skills on the standards. It doesn't take away the grading, the grades.
Further questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 2220? See none. I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2220. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2220.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2220 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves House Bill 2220 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? See none. Is there any objection? Seeing none. House Bill 2220 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I will be the carrier. And then close the work session on Senate Bill 2220. Which brings us to House Bill 2034. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2034. Linda?
House Bill 2034 aligns current statutes related to apprenticeships to the revised regulations adopted by the United States Department of Labor, Employment, and Training Administration, declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Okay, well, we have Stephen Sims, front and center. Sims.
Chair Haas, I appreciate it. And committee member Stephen Sims, SIMMS. I am the administrator for the Apprenticeship and Training Division at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. You should have a copy of my testimony before you, so I will summarize it briefly. The bill brings BOLI into conformance with recently revised federal regulations regarding registered apprenticeship. The state of Oregon, along with 26 other states, operates registered apprenticeship programs pursuant to a grant of agency from the United States Department of Labor. The federal regulations that govern the operation of apprenticeship had not been revised since 1977. In 2008, the Employment and Training Administration of USDOL implemented revised federal regulations that apply to states who operate apprenticeship programs. USDOL gave the states until December 29, 2010 to make those conforming changes. Unfortunately, just about every state has struggled with some of the federal language, so USDOL was kind enough to offer extensions to coming into compliance. The state of Oregon was granted an extension in 2010. Most of the changes in House Bill 2034 to Oregon's apprenticeship statute, ORS Chapter 660, are technical. For example, going with gender-neutral terms such as journey worker as opposed to journeyman, shortening the amount of time that a program has to register its apprenticeship agreements with the state. But there are two major changes that I'd like to bring to your attention. And the first is a redefinition of the roles and responsibilities of the State Apprenticeship Agency and the State Council. We currently have a regulatory council. There is an eight-member board. These individuals are nominated by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, and right now they make all final decisions regarding the administration of apprenticeship programs in the state, approval of new programs, review of existing programs, deregistration of non-performing programs. Under House Bill 2034, final decision-making authority would be shifted away from the council to the registration agency, the Apprenticeship and Training Division at Boley. We would retain the council in an advisory status, but again, the agency will now have the direct decision-making power. We think it's important to have that advisory council there because we don't have journey workers on our staff, we don't have contractors, we don't have business owners. We need the voices of people, the input of people who know how to operate programs to help us make the right decision. The other big change is with respect to recognition of apprenticeship programs from outside of the state of Oregon. We currently recognize any registered apprenticeship program from any other state or programs registered with DOL. We welcome them to work in our state. However, a number of other states will not recognize Oregon apprentices under current law. A number of other states will require contractors and employers to file new registration agreements, establish new apprenticeship programs to work in those states. The changes set forth in House Bill 2034 establish that reciprocity for traveling apprentices and their contractors is universal across all states. We feel this is a benefit for our contractors, and they will be able to work wherever the work may take them. The bill does provide that the wage standards that exist in the state to which the apprentice is going to will still apply, as will the journeyman to apprentice supervision ratio. So there's a mechanism of protecting both the local contractors and the apprentices by making sure that local labor standards are upheld. Many of the other changes set forth in 2034 based upon the federal regulations are things that the state of Oregon has been doing for a number of years, such as annual compliance reviews, annual EEO reviews, and putting limitations on the probationary period for registered apprentices. Passage of this bill will allow the state of Oregon to remain in compliance with the federal regulations and continue to register apprentices for this state. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. If we don't pass this, the repercussions are what?
Chair Haas, theoretically, USDOL would come in, decertify the state of Oregon as a registration agency, and they would be responsible for registering the 5,400 apprentices and 4,000 employers approved to register apprentices. Right now, USDOL is staffing the five-state region that we are in with six people. Compliance reviews would become almost non-existent. I assume there would be substantial delays in having apprentices registered and certified.
Pretty good hammer, is it?
We think so.
Questions for Mr. Sims? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let me bring up a panel of Brian Trivitz, John Rakowitz, and Brian Craig. John Little, if you're here too.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Little, and I represent the Oregon Carpenters Union. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2034. While it is simply a technical fix bill to comply with federal standards, beyond that, it demonstrates the support that the industry has for the Oregon Apprenticeship Agency and the work that they do to really maintain high standards in our industry. On behalf of the Carpenters Union, we represent almost 1,000 apprentices in the state of Oregon for our employers. We have training centers in Tangent, in Redmond, and our major training center is in the Portland area. Apprenticeship is really a best practice workforce model, as you may understand. It combines skills progression with wage progression through focused and supervised on-the-job training and supplemental classroom instruction. We maintain very high standards for our apprentices, and we are in the middle, in spite of a downturn in the economy, of recruiting the next generation of workers into our industry. These are high-wage, high-skill careers, and we really look forward to the growth of our industry again and the growth of our apprenticeship programs. We support the work of the Oregon Apprenticeship Agency, and we encourage you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. Chair Hass, members of the committee, John Rakowitz, I'm the Public Affairs Director for AGC Associated General Contractors, and we're here also to enthusiastically support your passage of this bill. It's not policy ground-making kind of bill, but it is a critical bill. Bottom line, we want Oregon to have the ability to continue to manage its own apprenticeship programs. That's the bottom line. And as John Little said, we hope for a comeback someday. This is a critical feature. We'll help fuel that. They're great paying jobs. We pay in our industry. And we particularly like the fact that this bill retains the Apprenticeship Council and engages members of the industry both on the management and on the labor side, which is not true in all states, is my understanding. And as much work is being done outside the state now, the acceptance across all state lines of our apprentices is a key factor.
Reciprocity.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Ryan Tribbett with the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council and the National Electrical Contractors Association. I'm just going to be really brief. These are federal requirements. We were brought into the process very early on. My clients were from the Labor Commissioner's Office. We are comfortable with the bill. Encourage you to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
All right. Thank you for your
Thank you.
This bill. Appreciate it.
Anyone else looking to testify on House Bill 2034? Then we will close a public hearing on House Bill 2034, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 2034.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 2034 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered, House Bill 2034 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Morris, moves to you. Would you like to carry this bill?
Certainly.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 234. And open up a public hearing on House Bill 2283. We'll get a refresher summary from Linda while Representative Gelser comes up.
She did make it back. Okay. House Bill 2283, as amended A engrossed, specifies the time during which the student is allowed to satisfy requirements for modified diploma, extended diploma, or alternative certificate, and allows a reduction in time if consent is provided, specifies hours of instruction and service the student must be able to access if the student is receiving modified diploma, extended diploma, or alternative certificate, authorizes the student's individualized education program team to decide that the student will not access total number of hours, declares an emergency.
Thank you.
There is the amendment.
Can you summarize this on the
Sure. There is a new -3 amendment that clarifies that students have access to instructional hours, transition services, and other services that are designed to meet the unique needs of the student as determined by their IPE team, and that when added together provide hours that equal at least the total of students attending public high school.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thank you very much for scheduling this follow-up hearing. You'll remember when this bill first came to you, my friends from Portland Public Schools raised some concerns in the interim time. I've had the opportunity to work with David Williams and with Morgan Allen of Oregon School Boards Association, and the result you have before you is a -3 amendment, which makes important clarifications to the bill. The first is that the bill as it originally came to you required that parents sign a consent when they're are fewer than the 990 hours. What we intended to do was to sign an acknowledgement that they had received information about the full range of services that a school district must make available. So this eliminates any concern that there might be about a parent having a veto power of any kind over a school district. We also removed the language that talked about the greater than what's on the IEP or the 990 hours. So that the bill as it now reads simply states it takes language from the Department of Ed that says a district can't unilaterally offer less than a full school day to everyone with a disability, and it then outlines the steps by which the IEP team will document its decision to offer less than a full-time day, and the only thing that you're signing is an acknowledgement that that the law has been disclosed to you. There is one other change. There's a housekeeping bit. If you look on the dash 3 amendment on page 2 at the bottom, and I have a legislative council opinion I can offer to you. In the original modified diploma bill, it talked about students being able to work towards a modified or extended diploma or a standard diploma at any high school in the state of Oregon. There was some question about whether that meant really every high school in the state of Oregon. Physically, the legislative council opined that, yes, the law does require that because the plain reading of the law says that it will be at each high school or at the public charter school, but we have been asked for clarification, and so we've just inserted the word on site to further clarify that that means physical. It is not a change in what the law is. It just creates more clarity. And I believe that I want to put on the record, what's required to be on site is not a specialized program, a specialized service. It's just courses like math, English, social studies. That's what's listed in the statute is required to achieve a standard, modified, or extended diploma, that wherever you attend high school in the state of Oregon, you have access to academic classes. And it's my understanding that with these dash 3 amendments, I'm not aware of any opposition remaining to the bill.
Well, we very much appreciate your flexibility and working with Portland in doing this. And all of the shuffling up here is because there's too many dash 3 amendments on the various bills. They're all 3 was a lucky number today.
And the bill ends in a 3.
I know. It's a lucky lottery number, I think, today. Questions on the amendment? Senator Morris?
Well, I'd like to thank Representative Grosser for finding a way forward. Good job.
And I would like to thank Portland Public and Morgan Allen for being very helpful in discerning that way forward. And David Williams, because he is not Portland Public. He works with Portland Public, and it is his birthday.
On the record. It is David Williams' birthday. And this is your gift today. Okay. Well, thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Is there any...
Stay and testify on the next...
Stand by for 2285.
In the back.
If there's no one else wishing to testify on House Bill 2283, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2283 and open up a work session on House Bill 2283.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 3 amendment to House Bill 2283 dated 5-6-11.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the dash 3 amendment dated May 5th, 2011 to the House Bill 2283A engrossed. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2283 engrossed as amended. This is new language here.
We don't have the physical back on these. We can't.
I'm sorry.
In that there was a conflict between 2283 and 2285, and we did receive the conflict amendment to 2285. But we don't have the fiscal back on it, and the two are...
That's okay. We have time. Mm-hmm. We have amended it, and we will move to a work session Thursday or whenever.
You can carry it over if you wish to carry it over.
We'll carry over House Bill 2283 until Thursday. Okay. And finally, last but not least, in the 2200 on your juries, and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2285.
Yes. 2285 identifies the person who may provide consent for the purpose of awarding high school diplomas, modified diplomas, and extended diplomas, and for the purpose of advancing the student to the next grade level, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2011. And I was briefly mentioning that there was a conflict with 2285 with 2283, and they had to tweak the dash 2 amendment, and just within the hour gave us a dash 3 amendment to resolve the conflicts, so that if 2283 becomes law, the section of House Bill 2285 is amended to reflect that law. And this dash 3 incorporates the dash 1, the dash 2, and it also clarifies a point that was made in the hearing, that consent provided by the parent of a student, you know, if the student is over 18 and has been determined not to be an emancipated student, that it, by a protective proceeding, that that student was not automatically able to give consent. So that was clarified.
Okay, Representative Gelser, it says here that you may not be in the Capitol today, but we see you.
I'm my own clone. I never told you who I was for the record before, so reminding, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm a state representative from Corvallis, House District 16, and Senator Morse's constituent. House Bill 2285 simply clarifies that same situation that Ms. Lindholm was just talking about. A student over the age of 18 who is not emancipated may need someone else to be qualified to provide that consent. The amendment that the department suggested of clarifying that that emancipation is determined by a court is very important. We do not take lightly taking away the ability to self-determine and make your own choices when you turn 18 just because you have a disability. This preserves that in the education system. It's a simple bill. I'm not aware of any opposition to it. And though I have not seen the dash 3 amendment, it sounds appropriate, but I'll check it out because it sounds like you don't have the fiscal back on this one.
We do
either.
Not.
Okay.
Questions? Senator Morse, your constituent.
She's doing good work.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just adopt that amendment. Close the hearing on House Bill 2285 and open up a work session on 2285 for purposes of adopting the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2285 dated 5-10-11.
Mm-hmm. Senator Morris moves to adopt the dash 3 amendment dated 5-10-11 to House Bill 2285. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Objection? Seeing none. So ordered, the dash 3 amendment is adopted to House Bill 2285, and we will carry it over to Thursday if we have the fiscals. Okay. There's no other work before us. We're adjourned.